Did Bob McCown just say what I think he said? You can rewind Primetime Sports Podcast when you subscribe at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. You just got called up to the big league, son. Welcome to the show. This is Primetime Sports with Bob McCown on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
So much for the Bryant phenomenon. 0 for 3, 3 strikeouts. Send him back down. That's enough of him. The phenom. It's Friday, the 17th of April, 2015. Primetime Sports on your radio, on your television. As usual, we're taking your phone calls this Friday. We didn't do it on Monday, so should be a lot of angst out there. A Monday was opening day, of course, for the Toronto Blue Jays, so we're down at the ball yard and didn't take your telephone call. So 870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. Those are the numbers to call, as always. Later, a roundtable. Ken Reed, Jeff Blair, Dave Perkins will all join me. Blue Jays play again tonight. Try and start racking up some wins at home. 1-3 in the series with Tampa. Somewhat surprising. Raptors welcome the Wizards to the ACC tomorrow. They play the first playoff game on the schedule at 12:30 Eastern Time. An early one. We'll address those two things. PK slash firing of Craig Berube. And a bunch of stuff to address later on. We'll see what you have on your mind. Let's go. Richard in Toronto, you're first today. Hello.
Hey, Bobcat. How are you today?
Good.
Just a couple things. One, do you think you're talking about the new carpet at the at Rogers Center? And I'm quite surprised, you know, and going back, talking about how players use their feet to tell when they're getting close to the warning track, not their eyes. I'm quite surprised, one, that Paul Beeston allowed it to be put in, not realizing that, and two, that the Players Association hasn't done anything to say, whoa, something's happening. Like, we could have Batista, for instance, go through the, you know, bang into the fence and be out.
What if anything has been said or done privately. We know that publicly, right, there's been no definitive response. So you're right publicly, but I'd be shocked if some player hasn't addressed this with the PA, or the PA hasn't become aware of it and questioned the wisdom of doing it.
Absolutely. And I'm surprised that the Jays themselves trying to protect their players when you got all that money. That's the kind of thing that you put into, for lack of a better term, a kid's indoor place.
Well, I haven't had a chance. Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Like, they have it, right, in the baseball thing up there. The second thing I wanted to mention to you is that there's a lot of reports going around now about what a cancer that Brendan Shanahan was in the dressing room when he was a player, you know, with players, other players' wives, you know, just not getting along, fighting. You know, there's the infamous Mike Keenan fight and all that. And here he is now supposed to be the character guy to lead the change in Toronto. And I just can't seem to put the two together. Thank you, Bob. I'll hang up and listen for your comments.
Thanks. I don't know Brendan Shanahan. He has avoided me since he's been here and has been invited on numerous occasions. Canceled a scheduled appearance earlier this week. I was led to believe he was coming in on Tuesday. They pulled the plug on that. I don't know when, if at all, he's coming in here. I can't make a comment on somebody I haven't spent any time with. To observe from a distance is a different scenario. I think my reaction would be more or less the same as yours. What he's done has been fairly obvious. I haven't heard anything unique from him. I don't know which direction he's going with hirings. I really don't have a sense for who this guy is, what he believes in. And I've said previously, I believe that if you work in Toronto, you should live in Toronto. If you work in New York, you should live in New York. But apparently, MLSE, in their infinite wisdom, which is nearly 50 years without a Stanley Cup, don't think that's a priority. It would be a priority for me. Sean Coburg, hello.
100% right, Bobcat. 100%. He's been hiding for the longest time. Well, he's not. You can't hide behind notice anymore. I want to ask you something. I think it was yesterday, didn't you ask Perkins what would he have said at the news conference? Because really, Shanahan said a whole bunch of nothing, if you ask me.
Well, and Perkins said that, and I confronted him and said, okay, what would you have said? And really, Perk didn't come up with very much of anything.
No, he didn't.
The truth is, there's not much you can say. So that's why I've sort of, you know, I roll my eyes at it because I've heard it 100 times before.
Right, we all have.
But I don't know. I mean, tell me what he could have said. What would have made you feel better than you feel?
No. I'm more interested in what you think, Bob. That's what I want.
Well, I don't know what
you didn't really comment a whole bunch on it, did you?
Well, because I don't think it's worth commenting on. I think it's just gobbledygook. And I mean, that's all I've heard from this guy so far.
Right?
Well, it's just junk, you know.
Right. You're right.
It's junk talk. I don't know what I expect. I mean, would I like it if a guy stood up and said, you know, we'll be in the playoffs in 3 years or I'll quit? Well, that'd be different. But, I mean, just, and we're going to rebuild. Okay. How are you going to do that? What's your focus going to be? Who are you going to bring in here? Are you going after a high-performance general manager? Or are you going to bring in somebody for a couple of years that's a good teacher that can work with the kids because you're going to have a lot of kids as a coach? Are you going to be the general manager? And in essence, I mean, he sort of indicated that they're going to try and get to the top of the food chain, but if they can't do that, if none of the good people will come here, and why would they, then maybe Shanahan himself will take it over. If I had to bet on anything, I'd bet on Sean Burke, who is a Shanahan guy, apparently, and Shanahan pulls the strings and Burke becomes the puppet. Maybe wrong. Hope I'm wrong. But the way this is unfolding, that seems like the most likely scenario to me. Rod, Mississauga, hello.
Hi there, how are you?
Good.
Thank you for taking this. I hate to be redundant about this, about Mr. Shanahan, but he's so wanting these players in Toronto just to be here. And to love Toronto and to love playing in Toronto, yet, you know, he doesn't want to come. He doesn't want to be here, doesn't want to live here. I just get so annoyed at this. I know you've said this before, but I just don't want to repeat myself. But he's the same kind of person. I don't know what he's trying to get at.
Well, I don't think it's a Toronto thing. I think it's an any place thing. I think it should be a mandate of your job to live in the city in which you work. I especially when you're talking about a profile as high as his. If we are going to perceive that Brendan Shanahan represents the city of Toronto in the NHL and in the hockey world, is the city not good enough for you? It's good enough to pay you a lot of money to be the president of the hockey team, but it's not good enough for you and your family to live here. Now, if he said, look, I got kids in school and I want to wait a year or I want to wait till the end of the school year. Oh, well, of course we would get that. We're reasonable people. We would say that makes sense. Sure. Okay. So, you know, when you can, you move. But to essentially not address it publicly and to not have any plans that anybody is aware of, to be here, I find that rather offensive. I don't use that as the sole barometer by which I'm judging him. And that's part of my responsibility, is to judge him. And that may be a small part of it when push comes to shove. But here's what I'll tell you. If he's doing a mediocre job, if I have to give him a grade and 10% is where he lives, and I'm on the cusp one way or the other, he's going to fail. It just makes no, it doesn't make any sense to me. Now, I don't totally blame him. I blame the guy who hired him, whether it's Tannenbaum or whoever it was at Bell or Rogers. But somebody hired the guy. And at some point, you had to raise the issue of where you're going to live. And the minute he says, well, I'm not moving from New York, you say, well, then you're not going to be the president of the Toronto Maple Leafs. I mean, you just sort of went through that with your CEO, who is on his way out, who apparently doesn't like the city either. And I'm okay with that. If you don't like living here, okay. But you don't get the job. You don't get to do it from afar. Nobody works better away from their family. We understand Shanahan spends a good deal of time here. That makes some sense. But his family's not with him. He doesn't have a home environment. He doesn't have a place. I don't know if he's staying in a condo, in a hotel. Where I don't know. Doesn't matter to me. But his life is in New York, and his job is in Toronto. And when he's in Toronto, he doesn't have the comfort of his life. And I don't believe that's a good scenario. But I guess we'll find out, won't we? Scotty in Port Perry, hello.
Afternoon, Robert.
Sir?
Absolutely asinine, this. I think Jeff Blair called Shanahan the invisible man. I couldn't agree more. So now you got to look at the Board of Governors or whatever the Tannenbaum and that group call themselves. But now we've got a president, unproven. Mark Hunter, yeah, he's great with the Ontario Hockey League, unproven in the NHL. Now we're talking Sean Burke, a goalie coach for GM. There's a reason.
Well, Shan, in that scenario, I think,
Robert.
Yeah, I think in that scenario, as I said previously, just to clarify, that Shanahan would essentially appoint himself general manager, and Sean Burke would be the stick man, if you will.
Yeah, maybe he can get his wife to be the coach.
Well, look, I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know. Would you come to the Toronto Maple Leafs? If you
challenge,
it's suicide.
Surround my people with NHL experience after 50 years of dismal.
Well, I think it's suicide. It's a suicide job. I think they're going to have a terrible time getting somebody to take this job. First of all, it's a complete rebuild from the bottom up with a bunch of inexperienced people. An organization that hasn't won in 50 years. A fractured board of directors. I don't see the upside. It's the home of hockey? Hardly. You know who thinks Toronto is the home of hockey? People that live in Toronto and are fans of the Maple Leafs. That's who will say it all the time. There are 25 better hockey cities this year to be in than in Toronto. And there'll probably be as many or more next year and the year after that. I'll tell you what, if I had a resume, if I had a history of success in the National Hockey League, I wouldn't even think twice about the Toronto Maple Leaf job. I am not interested. It is a license to fail no matter who you are or how good you are. The former general manager went to Calgary, got his team in the playoffs. An ex-coach wound up in Winnipeg, got his team in the playoffs. Not all the people that they've hired are complete and utter idiots. I know we like to paint them as that. But part of it is ownership. It's understanding what is necessary to win. short-term and long-term, and they have not been able to figure it out. Thomas, Toronto, hello.
Hey, Bobcat.
Hi.
Have you ever seen a scenario by which there's a complete facelift on an organization, beginning with the top, the CEO, and then the president, and then the GM, and then the coach? Have you ever seen any scenario like that?
Where they all get fired at once?
Well, I'm referring to what could be, what the Toronto Blue Jays could look like next year. I just heard the news about Keith Pelley, and then, Paul Beeston is not going to be back with the Jays, and Alex Anthopoulos could potentially be let go, and so can John Gibbons. So have you ever seen a scenario by which there's a facelift like that?
No, I can't think of one off the top of my head, but I'm not denying it's happened before. Maybe somebody can help us out on Twitter or on the phone lines. I don't really remember it happening, but again, we don't know that that's going to happen. We are 99.9% sure Beeston will not be back, but I will not go 100%. If you heard my conversation with him on Monday, I asked him about coming back. I am not 100% convinced that he won't be back. I'm pretty convinced, but I'm not totally convinced. In a general sense, you bring in a new president, a lot of times they want to bring in their own people. Sometimes it happens right away. Sometimes you live with a guy for a year. Can't tell you who the new guy's going to be, assuming there is one. Can't tell you how he'll feel about Anthopoulos or Gibbons. Can't tell you because I don't know what the team's going to look like at the end of this year. What I can tell you is, if this team gets to the postseason, it becomes almost impossible to fire either one of them. It would be rare upon rare that either a general manager or a manager is fired after getting to the postseason. I can't cite the case of the last time it happened. I think we would all agree. So the futures of the general manager and the manager are inexorably tied to the performance of the team this season. Does that mean if they don't make the playoffs, they will get fired? And the answer to that is no. But it raises the odds considerably. It becomes a much tougher sell, and more importantly, becomes a much easier justification on the part of the new CEO. Easier to say, well, they haven't made the postseason since 1993. Off with their heads. And don't think for a second that Alex and John aren't aware of this. They are perfectly aware of it. And as unfair as it might be, it is what life is about, and it certainly is what sports is about. And, they won't be the only coaches and or managers and general managers fired in Major League Baseball this year, if it happens. Peter is in Georgina. Hello.
Mr. McCowan, it's your friendly neighborhood golf pro from Bushwood, extending my annual invitation for you to come down for a lesson. And
am I giving or taking? Do you need a lesson?
You tell me at the end of the hour we spend together.
Okay.
I couldn't agree more with your thoughts on why would people want to even come to Toronto to play. And then also just the idea of, now that there are 30 teams, for example, in the NHL, your team statistically is going to win once every 30 years. So basically, you're going to win twice in your lifetime in Toronto, but there's this unrealistic expectation that teams can win. And other than baseball, what I was interested in are your thoughts on, I would argue that it's antitrust, but it certainly seems like there's collusion within pro sports that affects a town like Toronto's ability to have any intrinsic advantages because of our population and our fan interest. And, can the Leafs, for example, can they do anything outside of the salary cap to, provide houses for their players or provide jobs for family and do other things beyond the salary cap?
Well,
to create any kind of inherent advantages within
the
system?
No, I understand what you're saying, but the answer is no. Can they, would they be amenable to assisting a player's wife or sister or brother or something and getting a job, I'm sure they'd be more than happy to do that. But any employer would be happy to do that. And
do
I don't think that contravenes
the salary cap.
Well, it's not collusion, but it doesn't contravene any rules and regulations. No, it doesn't. But can you do things to manipulate the collective bargaining agreement and the salary cap? And the answer is no, you can't. Trust me, there are clauses in there that specify the limitations that each organization has, right down to literally to the penny. They can only spend this much. These are the hotel rooms have to be this, per diems have to be that. You can't take cabs or limousines everywhere you go, and down a long, long, long list. You can provide the best possible atmosphere in which to perform and to live. I would argue after the last two winters, living in Toronto has become a lot more difficult and a lot less appealing if you haven't been here before. And I think we would all concur with that. Whether it's cyclical or climate change, I don't pretend to know, but it's been two pretty rough winters. And essentially, hockey players are here for the winter. They arrive in September. If you're a Maple Leaf, you leave in early April. You're spending the brunt all of the winter, literally, in this city. If you like snow, if you like cold, it's great. If you're like me, it's torture. And you can't walk, if you're a Toronto Maple Leaf, you can't walk down the streets without being recognized. I mean, some guys it bothers, some guys it doesn't. But you take that into consideration. You go play hockey in Tampa. You'd be lucky if you get recognized once a week, once a month on the street. It's just not that way, even in L.A. In Chicago. There are very few places where you're going to go and get recognized anywhere near as much as you will in this city. So it does, it does limit your lifestyle. To some guys, it's not important. To some guys, they like it. To some, they hate it. But there are factors that mitigate the potential success of the Toronto Maple Leafs. And most of it is historical incompetence. Not just incompetence, because any organization can have a bad year or two. This is biblical incompetence. Nearly 50 years. The epicenter of hockey. Can't win a Stanley Cup. Can't get to the Stanley Cup final. Barely have had a sniff over those 50 years. Where to next? Thank you. Will in Peterborough, you're next. Hello.
Hi, Bobcat. How are you? First time, long time. Great to talk to you.
Thank you.
I want to address something that you said on Wednesday in your conversation with Glenn Grunwald, the athletic director at McMaster University. And I do want to say that I am one of the proud and one of the few CIS diehards. I really love the product. I've watched it my whole life. My dad actually coached the Queen's University men's hockey team for 11 years. And you're right in that, a lot of people in this country do not invest, whether it be alumni of schools or current students. And as you said, it's never really been figured out as to why. And we say, is it the product on the field or the ice or the court, what have you, or is it just, what is it? And for me, I think the answer is that there are people like Mr. Grunwald and others in the CIS who simply don't promote the product nearly as much as they should. Mr. Grunwald even said on Wednesday, geez, we got a bunch of people out to the first game of the season, but then nothing happened after. My question to him would be, what did you do to those students to entice them back? Like, did you knock on their doors? Or did you just, assume that they would want to come back based on the product in the field? Because, again, it's not the product. You know, we have, in football, we have many people go to the CFL, a handful go to the NFL. Basketball is growing. But it's really, the CIS needs to do a better job in promoting their product themselves and getting it out to Canadians.
I agree with that assessment. I have agreed with it for a long time. I have been in this business for 40 years. I cannot remember the last time I was contacted by an SID at a Canadian institution. Not asked for something, or even contacted. I'm not on their radar. I can't even tell you for sure how many sports information directors there are at the major schools. Here's what I'll tell you culturally that I have lived through in this country. Canadians have American envy when it comes to sports. They don't want to say it. They'll tell you they don't, but they do. Canadians want to be part of the big scene, and they believe that the big scene is in America. If you took all the American teams and put them in one division, all the Canadian teams in another division, in hockey, in the NHL, people in Canada would be screaming for the American teams to come back. People think this would be the nirvana. It'd be the exact opposite. And that's why I believe that as college sports have grown, it is time to look at investing in the future and keeping our premier talent here. Because you can tell me, yeah, we produce... Canadian colleges, universities produce football players that go to the CFL and go to the NFL. Well, not many go to the NFL. That's pretty rare. They go to the CFL because they got a quota. Take the quota away, and there'd be virtually no Canadians playing in the CFL. Not that they aren't talented. But generally speaking, if they've gone to a Canadian university and they were born in Canada, the perception is that the coaching is inferior, not as intensive. And I think for the most part, that's true. So those kids need extra time, which they wind up getting in the CFL. If a program like Carleton, for example, decided to abandon the CIS because you can't draw, you can't make money, the quality of the competition is inferior. You've proven that you're competitive against Division I schools, high-performance Division I schools in the U.S. If you went that route, I would invest. I would put money into that program. Now, I understand that's purely theoretical, and as such, I could say anything. But I believe very strongly that in a very short period of time, all of those alumni students that are staying away in droves would wake up. If you've got Notre Dame plays Saturday, Ohio State is in on Sunday. You don't think eyeballs are going to open up? You don't think people are going to pay attention? You don't think that eyes would be on television the first time a Canadian school is playing on ESPN or ABC in a U.S. nationally televised college basketball game? You betcha they would. Now, the downside to all this, very quickly, is the NCAA is a mess. It is without question the worst sports organization in the world. It is appalling. It is despicable. It is dinosauric. But that's all you got. Hold your nose and make some money. You forget having 200-300 people in the stands for a basketball game or 1,500 in the stands for a football game, and that's good some places. 10 years from instituting that kind of a program, you'd be looking to build your own new facilities. You know, a 12 to 15,000 seat basketball arena, a 30,000 seat football stadium. Because that's what you'd need. If you think U.S. college sports is not big time, you've never seen it. You've never been there. It is every bit as big as professional sports. And it's big in little college towns across America. You don't have to be in a big population center. You can't put an NHL team in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, or an NFL team or a Major League Baseball team. Can't do it. But you got a college football team there and a college basketball team there that sells out virtually every game. 60,000 in the football stadium, close to 20,000 in the basketball arena. I think there's only 35,000 people in Tuscaloosa. Maybe bigger than that, but I've only been there once. And I understand people come from everywhere, but this is big-time sports. And it generates big, big, big dollars for the school. To hold your nose up and say, well, we're Canadian, we have a different policy on this, is stupid. If I was Carlton, I'd be knocking on that door right now. Right now. If I was Laval's football team, I'd be there already. I got to play Division II first? Okay, play Division II. 3 years, maybe 5 years of doing that, I'll get into Division I. And I'll be competitive. We got to take the break. It's 29 before the hour. We'll come back with more of your phone calls. Primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Every time I hear this song, I flash back to the early 80s and my days at Global Television. It was back in the days when we used to do videos, like sports videos. We would take a popular song and put a bunch of pictures to it and run it. We used to do that on Sportsline a lot. And that was one of the songs that was popular at that time that we used to do videos to. And you'd have boxing guys and you'd have hockey players fighting and you'd have baseball players hitting home runs and, you know, linebackers crashing into unsuspecting quarterbacks. It's funny how songs always find a place in your life. Where were you? What were you doing? That's one of those ones for me. It's not my favorite song by any stretch of the imagination. That's the image that is conjured up every time I hear that. All right, enough of me. Now, some of you. Colin in Vancouver, BC, hello.
Good afternoon, Bob.
Sir.
Long-time watcher, listener.
Thank you.
First-time caller.
Thanks for calling.
You made some great points earlier in the week about entertainment value of the NHL. And as a longtime Montreal Canadiens fan, I was a Canadiens fan when I first came to Canada in the 70s, out on the West Coast here for the last 35 years, so I like to see the local team do well. When it comes to entertainment, how do you equate putting the Maple Leafs on TV at every opportunity other than, I understand, the financial and the marketing and such, but just from a pure entertainment point of view, I would like to see the do it like the NFL does. Here's the flex game. Montreal's playing San Jose. There's some playoff implications there, and we've switched to that.
Well, I mean, there's 2 points here. Number one, this network, and I had nothing to do with it, obviously, this network did move the Toronto Maple Leafs off the main Saturday night game late in the season. At least once, maybe more than once. That's number one. Number two, look at the ratings. If any other team could match the Toronto Maple Leafs ratings on the main network, specifically on Saturday night, that's who would be on. I know there's lots of Montreal Canadian fans out there. Canadians have a very good team. They're in the Stanley Cup playoffs, second in the conference, all that stuff. I get all that. You put them on instead of the Leaf game, it's dwarfed by what the Leafs would have drawn. Vancouver, same thing. Calgary, Winnipeg, Edmonton, on and on and on and on and on. They're still the biggest draw. They're the biggest draw.
I understand. I just think the fans of your team deserve better based on the items that you were talking about earlier about the ineptitude of historical levels on this organization.
Well, I can't explain Leaf fans. I can only explain me, and I won't watch that crap. I'm not really that in. I think the NHL has become colossally boring. I know it's the playoffs. I know there's people who are vested. But if you're like me and you don't have a team, you don't have a vested interest, and you're watching for entertainment value, this league leaves me far short too many times. Maybe over the course of the playoffs, I'll get re-engaged. You know, I was compelled by my wife to watch the Montreal Canadiens game opening night. It was marginally entertaining, but it wasn't epic. Unless you're invested. For her, she was all over it because she's a Habs fan. But if you're not and you're interested purely as an entertainment product, is this entertaining me enough that I don't want to change the channel? And the answer was no. So I grabbed the remote and changed to the baseball game, which, as I recall, was like 9-1 at the time. She'd grab the remote and put the hockey game back on. I couldn't justify going back to the baseball game too often because it was a complete blowout. But during the regular season, I think it comes down to this. The product that draws you the most audience is the product that's going to get the widest distribution. And invariably, good, bad, or indifferent, the Toronto Maple Leafs are that. And I wish it wasn't so. Keith in Burlington, hello.
Yeah, good afternoon, Bob.
Yes, sir.
Just sitting here on hold, remembering a conversation I had with you, I think, in February, about the notion of unloading Reyes. And because as sure as the long weekend's coming, you know he's going down with injury. And this won't be the last one.
No.
There'll be many more.
Who's going to take him at that salary, though?
Yeah, I know you make a valid point.
You know, I mean, I'm not sure that they want to trade Jose Reyes. But if somebody called and made them a decent offer, I think they would have to listen to it for the exact reason you submit.
Sure. Here's the reason why I called.
Oh, there was another reason.
Not to cut you off. Sorry.
All right.
If I lived in I don't live in Montreal, so I can't. But I'm a Habs fan, so I can't speak, you know, from a person's point who lives there.
Sure.
But let's just say, for talking sake, something happened to Bergevin, whatever happened, and they decided to bring in Lamoriello. He became available, and I'm just being hypothetical, obviously.
Okay.
But if he came in and did a great job, I wouldn't care where he lived. So I understand your position about, you know, the GM, you know, living in the city that employs him, but I just don't understand why it's so important to you.
I think at least in the early stages, in theory, I understand what you're saying. I think at least in the early stages, I want to know that that person has a commitment, not just to the franchise that he works for, but to the city. Because essentially, I believe that your high-profile sports people represent your city. And I don't want somebody representing my city who doesn't live in my city. Maybe it's just me. I don't think you can do as good a job when you spend so much time commuting back and forth to New York. I don't think you'd do as good a job if you have a family that you're away from for extended periods of time. I think the normalcy of a lifestyle is important to your ability to function at work. I can't be more tangible than that. I can't give you examples. I just believe that to be true. It just makes sense. I think Brendan Shanahan is in a highly paid position. He makes several million dollars a year. I don't know exactly what, but several million. I think part of the sacrifice, if it's a sacrifice at all, is you got to move. If you're not prepared to move, I'm going to find somebody else. And in Brendan Shanahan, we have somebody with, let's count the years of experience, zero experience doing this job. Zero. So you're taking a completely green guy and plopping him into the job who has told you, well, I'll take the job, but I won't move there. I'd rather live in New York. Call me crazy. Ida said, hit the road, Toad. Jose, Toronto, hello.
Good afternoon, Mr. McCallum.
Sir.
Bob, the reason I called today is I've heard you now on more than one occasion referring to why African-American kids, and obviously in the U.S. and minority kids, why they're not playing baseball. And you've brought up the fact that you don't think economics has anything to do with it. Bob, I just want to let you know, I've been coaching baseball for about 15 years. I've coached from T-ball to AAA to the Premier League. I was on a team that was involved in a national championship. And I can tell you, at the younger ages, baseball is very, very affordable. And I certainly don't want to say anything to discourage people from signing up and playing. And if you plan to be a recreational player, baseball is one of the most affordable games.
I agree.
However, if you want to be a baseball player and you're committed and you want to go down south and you want to play college baseball or get drafted, baseball is just right there with hockey. It is huge money to play.
Well, what, for a Canadian going to Florida and all that stuff?
No, I'm talking about playing here, traveling around.
Well, yeah, but I'm not talking about, we're not talking about kids from Canada. We're talking about kids generally from the U.S.
In the U.S., it's expensive, Bob.
No.
There's a lot of traveling teams, private coaching. It's very, very expensive.
Well.
Like I said, if you want to be a recreational player, absolutely, you're bang on. But when we're talking about the major leagues, you're not talking about recreational players. You're talking about guys who want to get the big leagues.
Well, if you're playing, I got news for you. If you're playing AAU basketball, it's expensive too. They do every bit as much travel and sometimes more, and they find ways to get around that. I'm not buying that argument. I know better. I know that baseball, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that everybody can afford to play baseball. That's not why black kids aren't playing baseball. I understand there are circumstances. But I don't think it's the primary reason. I think they're more interested in football and basketball. They've morphed more in that direction. And the cost of playing those sports is higher, at least until you get to a certain level. So, we can debate it all you want, but the reality is this. The number of African Americans playing in Major League Baseball today is down significantly. Has been going down for decades. It's not because of absence of talent. It's because of absence of interest. Absence of participation. Not channeling good athletes into that sport. It's something Major League Baseball needs to address and has acknowledged it needs to address. Reed Blair Perkins coming in next is a roundtable for you when Primetime continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.